Technical difficulties. Well, hey, welcome to the special situation report. I'm doing a one-on-one with Clay Martin. He's been on my round table, and it was actually kind of interesting when I put him on the round table. Like, hey, dude, you don't know who I am. I don't know you, but we're going to do this discussion. Let's get to it. Come on the show and we'll talk about shit that you don't know anything about. Shoot from the hip. Way to go.
So, I've lived most of my life that way, not knowing what we're talking about, so it's all good. So, improvise.
Yeah, so I appreciate you coming on, man. I know this has been a scheduling nightmare for you, and you've been busy like I have, so I appreciate you making the time, especially that we're doing this today, and we're also doing the roundtable. So you've got a full plate, and I'm dominating your time, which it's totally okay, because Colonel, so I can
That's
do that.
That's why things work, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. So everything rolls down here, right? Nice. So. So let's start with, so you're an author, you do a podcast, you've got a ton of irons in the fire. Give the audience a bit of your background, so everybody understands where you came from, what you're working on, how to find you, especially, cause I know that I get asked all the time how to find, everybody in the round table. So let's start there.
So, you know, classic irons in the fire, that's a special forces guy thing. I think they actually select us for ADD. And can we, you know, keep a bunch of things stirring at once? I think that's actually part of the process. And a quick down and dirty about me. Started as a reconnaissance Marine, a scout sniper in the Marine Corps. Then my GT score went up. That means your intelligence test for you non-military guys. So I cross-decked over to the Army, joined Special Forces. I was in 3rd Special Forces Group. I was a communications guy. Then I was an intelligence sergeant. And I was also an assault and a sniper in a dedicated direct action force. After I retired, I did a bunch of stuff in the gun industry, which is, you know, normal for us, and realized that I didn't really love that either. So I started writing books, and I've written 5 now, 3 in the fiction vein, and then 2 survival books, which is most applicable to you know, the kind of people we're talking to today.
And let me ask you a couple questions. Sure. So, how do I say this? You're right about the SF community, right? Because there's the Travis Haley, DJ Shipley crowd,
right,
that's got their own, the Sean Ryan, they got their own shows.
Stuff.
Yeah, yep. They're doing their own niche. And Travis Haley is here. He's here in Phoenix, right?
Oh, yeah.
Haley Strategics, yep. right yep. down the road, really. And great guy, by the way, because he said a few years ago, I think it was like 3-4 years ago now, he said, you know, I've made my money. I've got my business. I've got my brand. I'm going to go do something to help kids
and that's awesome.
to help repatriate kids and deal with the child trafficking thing. And I
good
was
for
like,
him, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. So I was like, that's a dude I got to have on the show.
Yeah. That's legit.
So he's one of those guys where he's, and he's funny to listen to, right? Where Sean Ryan's all about, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 hour interviews.
Yeah.
I think hour and a half is about max density for me. Like 2 hours on the round table with the chat and Twitter and all the other stuff
right.
going on. It's like saturation for me, right?
Right.
So I got to give you props for doing the books, doing the shows, doing the interviews, trying to deal with your family,
right.
and oh, by the way, trying to make a living all at the same time.
Right.
It's tough, man. It's very tough. So
it is. It's very tough.
Yeah, so I appreciate you coming on. So what I want to talk to is you did an interview with Mike Ferris, and both of us have been on Mike's show. And a great guy, by the way.
Mike's like awesome.
2 hours with him over here in Cave Creek having coffee the other day and learned a lot about him. And you guys talked about how you see things developing. And, you know, those of us on the round table,
right.
like although – the worst part about doing this is that everybody in the round table watches all your stuff. And then they critique you before you go on the show.
right.
So you get all the feedback before you go on the show. And it's too funny because, you know, if hey, I disagree on this or, hey, I agree with this. Right. So.
Right.
It made the rounds. All of us watched the interview. I thought it was spot on. And the thing that I wanted to zero in on is, you know, all of us have a military view of the world. Right.
Right.
But you had a view of the world that I think is very salient, and that. You talked about things are going to develop a certain way, and there's a lot of people that are just not going to make it through.
Right.
And let's start from there, because I think my view of the world is this is going to develop over a series of events that are not necessarily going to be major events. And there may be a major capstone event, which I thought I was convinced that the capstone event was going to be March or April. And I think that that event came and went, and it was the missile exchange between Iran and Israel, and nothing developed out of it.
Nothing happened. Right. We know where.
Right. So, and I thought that that was, and the reason why I think that was a capstone event is because that's the first time in probably 20 years they've had a direct exchange between the two countries. Right. Yeah. Which is not a little thing.
Correct.
However, if it was staged, if it was coordinated, who knows?
Right. It certainly looked that way. You know, it was like,
yeah,
it was weird. Yeah. It was very strange. Yes.
Yeah. So it looked very coordinated and very, very scripted. But that said, it represents a shift in where we are domestically, where we are in foreign policy. And I see a lot of things developing out of that, especially over the next several months as we get into the election with these Palestinian protests and all that other BS. But then there's the importation of all the Palestinians, which nobody else in the world wants. So, of course, we have to bring them here.
Right. The Jordanians hate them and won't take them. So we need to take them to America. That's good. Yeah, that's good stuff.
And the Egyptians block the exit to the Sinai. Like, we're not even going to let you go to the Sinai Desert where there's no water and no, you know, habitable land there. We're not even going to let you go there. We're going to block you at the entrance.
Because they know they've tried it before. They know it's a terrible idea.
Yeah. So, so there's a lot there. So I'll just let you pick a place to start, and let's just go from there.
So here's a weird way of looking at how things are going to develop, but especially for like an intelligence guy, which I was too. I don't think, honestly, we should spend a lot of time focusing on how it's going to develop. I think there's so much propaganda right now, so much nonsense in the air, so many option paths, that the only way to actually keep your stuff together is to just kind of disassociate and not worry about exactly which path it's going to go, and kind of prepare yourself for all eventualities. I think we can look with broad strokes and see like the major things they're trying to get to. But as far as like, you know, precise prediction, man, this is gonna be honest. Like ever since like 2020, I've kind of given it up. And a lot of this has to do not only with just the real propaganda going on. There's so much, was it something like 60% of the internet right now is written by AI. So they can create just piles and piles and piles of fluff. Most of the magazine articles you read anymore are written by AI. So I think they're actually, part of their strategy right now is to throw so much stuff at the wall that you cannot possibly sift through all of it. The second piece of that I think is important for all of us, and especially the audience, this is also weird as an intelligence guy to say, but you kind of have to stop trying to prove things out. Like, there is not time to go down all the rabbit holes and see what actually happened. There's just not time. And so much of this stuff is distractions. You know, it's like the Trump thing has been going on for 3 years, ever since the election.
I stopped paying attention in 2021, man. Like, who cares?
Yeah. It's smart. Yeah. Yeah. We've got two trials now that are dominating the news cycle. They're completely irrelevant. And I don't care who did what, because it doesn't change anything for me as far as what I, you know, is actually happening with me. And so it's a weird way of looking at it, but I kind of think that's how you have to do it.
Well, I think about it this way, right? How do you maintain your sanity and look at all the inputs, right? Because they flooded the system with garbage information, right?
Right.
Like you were saying, the AI generates the garbage and then cultivates the garbage.
Right.
Just like in Twitter, that's why I think Elon Musk is completely full of shit, is he talks a good game, but you can see the AI and bot-driven conversations.
Right.
That, you know, they have, there's influencers. I don't even think they post. I think it's all AI that's posting for them, because everything you respond to them with comes back with some kind of a racist trope.
Right.
And it does. There's literally, there's a couple of influencers that are on Twitter that I think are completely AI driven, because they post things about anti-Semitic and racism. And every time you respond to them, it's literally immediate, like within seconds, there's a response by that person, supposedly, that's a racist trope, and that you're a racist or anti-Semite.
Right.
And that's why I think that the whole system is full of garbage. Now, the interesting question that everybody has, which I think is a valid question, is Putin in on it? Is he coordinate with?
I have the same question.
Yeah.
You know, it's it's honestly a valid concern, especially when you look at the fact that we had to turn the money tap off in Afghanistan. That's all Afghanistan was the last 10 years, was a money laundering.
Oh, we're still sending money to the Taliban.
Right.
Still.
But when we turned off the big tap for the military industrial complex, 6 months later, Putin invades Ukraine and turns the tap back on for our military industrial complex. That bit of timing will always be a little bit suspicious to me.
There's nothing suspicious about it. They needed another war. They needed the spigot turned on. And so they created another war, right?
Right.
And they probably said to Putin, we'll siphon off 20% and we'll send it into a bank account in Switzerland and you can have at it. And all of this, you know, confiscation assets, don't worry about it. We're going to do a show where we confiscate your big assets that you don't care about, but we'll make sure we make it up to you on the back end in some Swiss bank account. I agree with that completely because it's not just the timing was suspect. It was just too convenient that we turned off the spigot. We pulled out Afghanistan. We left a bunch of arms there. And then we started throwing money at it as a money laundering service. And I mean, it's really all it is, a money laundering service.
All agreed 100%.
And then the part that I think that I don't want to say sticks in my craw, the part I can't definitively say with certainty is that depleting our strategic war stocks and sending all the 113s, all of the older equipment. Okay. I mean, say what you want about the 113. We had thousands of 113s and all those heavy E brigades we had. All the light brigades, they all had 113s in them. We had thousands of those armored personnel carriers. And the kicker was they were highly reliable, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you could beat the shit out of those things. They basically had a rubber band for a track, and you can run the shit out of them all over the place, like the old half tracks, right? The Israelis ran those old M3A1 half tracks for like 60 years. They ran those things because they basically had rubber bands for tracks, and they could run them everywhere.
Right.
And anyway, where I'm going with this is we've depleted our strategic war stocks. We know we can't build it because we don't produce steel here. We don't produce anything other than composite materials, and we don't produce a lot of that. So it really begs the question that if China's got an asset in the White House, big picture, right? You have China over here they've got an asset in the White House. They've got assets in, you know, owned assets in Congress. They've got owned assets in the World Health Organization, the World Economic Forum, as well as assets throughout the United Nations. And they've been orchestrating in the background this communist takeover and infiltration of the country. I would be very, very surprised if China wasn't the intermediary between Russia, the U.S., and the military-industrial complex to work all of the money laundering, to work all of the payments, to work all of the production of war script. Because the one thing we haven't seen that I thought we would have seen already is we haven't seen the Russians move in mass, right? Part of their doctrine is to flood whoever they're attacking with thousands of tanks and just overwhelm them like they did. Because their World War II doctrine is still in place, right? Their defensive doctrine they've used for 2 years. They're literally using doctrine from 1942.
Right.
So they haven't changed doctrine. And part of their doctrine is to use overwhelming numbers with stuff that's just good enough to be good enough, which is how they've always built things. We haven't seen any of those kind of mass movements. In fact, we haven't seen any movements, which leads me to believe that there's been an orchestrated and coordinated effort in the back end, and I would say by the Chinese, because think about it this way. How many people have made the homage to Beijing over the last 3 to 4 years since Biden took office to either coordinate with the Chinese or coordinate with Xi? And then when I look at that, I see, okay, Putin's probably, he's probably coordinating with the Chinese. They're probably the intermediaries between the U.S. and NATO. And this is a controlled demolition of both NATO and the U.S. At least that's how I see it.
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, it makes completely logical sense. So, I mean, you're exactly right. It's almost like this Ukraine war has been drug out just to make it last longer without a decisive victory by either side and cost more money. Yeah, it's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
And they've killed off, like 550,000, 600,000 dead on the Ukrainian side with 1.5, 1.2 million wounded. Some of them are going to be in the system forever now because they're so horribly wounded. I mean, just much like we went through, right? Million wounded, 5,000 dead, at least 5,000 dead regular forces. That's not contractors. So I see the same pattern of behavior occurring across both Ukraine and in Israel. You know, Israel's a little bit different, but I mean, they're already saber rattling against Hamas and against Hezbollah and against Iran. The question is, when they turn their attention north, is it going to be a protracted conflict Ukraine? So, and the reason why I'm sitting here thinking, okay, how is this going to develop, is that at some point they have to bring that violence here, right? And that's the part that I see occurring in the next 6 months before the election.
Right. And, you know, I don't disagree with that statement. So I think you have to look at this at the 30,000 foot level of one of two things is their agenda. It's either World War III, which is a strong possibility. It's why they keep poking the bear so much. And it's also why they keep poking Iran so much. They're actually trying to start like a major shooting war. Because that's how you fix debt anyway. The second option is that they're just going to let the United States break kind of end of empire style. Therefore, they can break our money, no more dollar, switch to a CBD, and everybody's under a kind of a, you know, mass prison. So there's a couple of different ways of accomplishing that. One is like the infiltrators. The thing that people don't understand about the Chinese, especially, which we've seen a lot of come over the border. All right, if Chinese are highly disciplined, all right, in a way that like we have never faced. In fact, in a lot of ways, unlike even our own, you know, operator Steve Ninjas and whatnot. So, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, if I went into Chinese SOCOM as, you know, Chinese General Clay, and I was like, I need 1,000 guys, volunteers, or hell, I wouldn't even ask for volunteers, 1,000 guys. Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to the United States. You're going to do nothing criminal, nothing. You're going to live no kind of weird life. You're just going to get a job at McDonald's. And when I say go, say November 3rd of 2024, you're all going to, in pairs of two or threes, you're all going to go break these pieces of infrastructure. That would absolutely cripple us. I mean, absolutely cripple us. And they're capable of doing it. And they don't even have to all succeed. Like a third of them have to succeed, and it's over. You knock out that much of the power grid for us, it's done. And you can do that with, you know, SKSs. You don't even need, you know, EMPs or bombs or anything cool. So that's option number one.
And they've been we should round that out and say that they've already been probing. They've already been testing that methodology against substations across the U.S. Mm-hmm. They've taken down, God, I last count, I was talking to somebody that's in the system, said that at least 50 substations or 100 across the U.S. have been taken down by rifle fire. Like literally pinpoint rifle fire, they've taken down substations across the U.S.
I didn't know it was that high. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been going on. Well, it's been going on for 3 years, right?
Right.
And then the other question is are they going to go after water supply? Because the water supply is another way to cripple us too, right?
No, it's a great one. Yeah, it's a great one. Yeah. Or even, you know, the old, if you want to get really, really spicy, you know, what some of us as, you know, soft guys talked about back in like 2004, 2005 is how many IEDs do I need randomly placed on I-40 and I-95 to shut this country down? And the answer is not very many.
Yeah, that's a very small number.
It's a very small number.
It fucking, yeah, you a couple of, like here, there's a couple of choke points here. You hit those choke points, guess what? Full stop in the entire city. And I mean, not just for a day, full stop for a week.
Right.
And no way to unwind it. And
right.
That's every major city is that way, right? Like Los Angeles.
Oh, good maybe, God. Oh, yes.
Maybe two IEDs, full stop. Right. And they're chaos. And they'll be running around the streets. Yeah. So I would say all the above is on the menu. And the question is, how do they initiate? Because it's a one-trick pony, right? It's not, they're not going to be able to, because they have troops too, right? They have to sustain those troops. And even if they have stockpiles of food and water, et cetera, and they're in their own enclaves next to our military bases, they still have to resupply. And logistics is not something the Chinese do. They might be disciplined fighters. They might be disciplined They might be disciplined in the soldier sense, but logistically, they don't have, they can't do what we do logistically.
Well, it depends on what they want to do. It depends on what the end state is. If the end state is to just hurt us enough that we start fighting each other as like a population reduction agenda, then they don't have to resupply. They just have to get out of the way. You break that infrastructure and then let the country come apart at the seams, which it's already doing with the lights on, and it's good fight and good night.
Yeah.
Which honestly leads to what I feel like is the second case scenario. And it does rely on, you know, do you believe that they really want to reduce population? Which I do, because they say it out loud all the time.
Oh, absolutely they do, because they want to, their agenda, the Chinese agenda, is to occupy the planet, not just to own it, to occupy it. Mm-hmm. And they're using the Maoist marketing plan, which is you surround all of the key areas, meaning the key population areas, with Chinese, and pretty soon you own everything around it, then you own it. And that's what they've been doing literally across the planet. And the Chinese autonomous zones and Zaire, and I think there's Zaire, there's like three countries that have Chinese autonomous zones. They did exactly that. They moved in a bunch of Chinese around the urban areas, and now they basically own all the urban areas. And that's what they want to do. And they can do that in the U.S. without even breaking a sweat with their population at home, and occupy everything here, literally everything. So, and I have to qualify this, because every time I say this, it draws fire from the whole Zionists are in charge, the cabal, all that bullshit. Look, I don't know how much of that is real, and I've stayed away from saying that these people are definitively the people behind all this, because I look at what China's doing just with the pro-CCP NGOs, the influencers, and all of the spies that they placed in every urban area in this country, and every institution. And I see the Chinese are behind a lot of this, right? Because they always use proxies to do everything.
Right.
Mainly because they're passive-aggressive fucks, and they do everything passive-aggressively. And so you can't call them out directly, which is what Trump did, which is why they were all pissed off about it, is because he called them out directly for the passive-aggressive shit that they do all over the world, right? And, you know, and I say that somewhat in jest, but they use proxies for everything. And their idea of total war is they'll burn 100,000, 200,000 of their people if it means they can burn a million of their enemy. And
or vice versa, actually. They're fine with that, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, but you know what I mean, right? So
yeah.
I don't know who's ultimately behind it. I think there's deep dark behind this that people don't know the names of and don't know the families. But I'm not worried about them right now. I'm worried about the close fight. And the close fight is we have the Chinese, the cartels, we have special forces from all these different countries. Plus, we've got Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda. All those guys are here, right? Those creations that we've created across the planet have come home to roost. So the question really boils down to, you know, how soon do we think we'll see it? And I think we're going to see it this summer. And I think it's long before the election.
This is a tough crystal ball to crack. All right. It is with the way things are right now. But I agree. And I do not think they can go to a 2024 election. I just don't think they can let that happen for two reasons. Number one, everybody knows now that Biden is a complete chucklehead. Like, even the guys on the left are like, oh my God, like, this shit is all fucked up. Like, everything is fucked up. The economy is toast. Like, it's not good. He had no support last time, but he has like less than no support this time. If they go to an election and say Biden won, everybody knows. Everybody knows it's rigged. All right, there's no denying it this time. I hope, good God. But that's my belief. So I don't think...
I think it's bigger than that. I think that they know that there'll be an overwhelming landslide for Trump because there's no other options. And I think that... So I see... and you're right. Right? This could go one of three ways. It could be just this quiet nothing burger until things collapse. Mm-hmm. And they consolidate power. They pass all the bullshit laws they want to pass, and people just go into oblivion, which is what I think they really are hoping for. Number two is there's some kind of violence, there's some kind of turmoil, there's some kind of civil unrest, and some kind of a, let's say, civil disturbance that leads them to consolidate power. Or then option three, which is the civil war aspect of it, where they generate a civil war, a race war, and a culture war all at the same time, and then they just sit in the background and consolidate power and take out the key players until they get down to the people that they want left, which is, you know, basically non-white people.
Right, and not many of those.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so those, all three of those scenarios could play out. All three of those are win-win for them. I think the... I've said this before. You've heard me say this on sit reps. You've heard me say this on the roundtable. And you're a military guy, so you're going to identify with exactly what I'm about to say. Anytime you plan a complex operation where you have multiple pieces that have to go a very specific way, it only takes one to go sideways to blow up the entire operation, right? Correct. How many times have you stepped off the lane departure? And I know you said it because I've said it, sir. This is a really bad idea. Too many parts to this that literally count on the enemy doing exactly what we think they're going to do, exactly the way they think they're going to do it. And if they go one way left or one way to the right, we're fucked. And you step off the line of departure, everything turns to shit, and your commander says, I didn't expect that to go that way. And everybody around him is going, we did.
Right.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Oh, yeah, of course, yes.
And that's where I see this, and I see all these plans that they're coalescing. The other thing I see, which I know you see too, is they don't have a vision for the other side. They just want control. They don't have a vision for how they want society to look once they've gained control.
Oh, I think they do.
Well, I think they do to a certain extent, but go back to I'll go back to the French Revolution, right? Mm-hmm. As the oppression, the violence, as the control measures get heavier and heavier and heavier, the culture starts to resist more and more and more. So that doesn't last very long any way you implement it, right? And what they're trying to implement with this digital control grid, this digital currency, they're gonna at some point they will roll out a digital currency.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
But there's going to be a mass pushback on it. They've probably war gamed it. And I don't think that they've war gamed for just about every contingency, because there's a lot of guys like you and I that know how to fuck up their entire system. And it doesn't take a lot of effort to do it. Right. A couple of key things taken down and their entire system comes to its knees. And I see that happening because there's a lot of smart people in this country that know how both tech works, know how the government works, but more importantly, knows how the backbone works and can take out the backbone that cripples everything they're trying to do. And I see that happening in the very first weeks of them implementing the digital currency and social scoring system.
See, here's the difference. I see the difference in how they get there. So I don't think they'll just roll it out. I think the violence and the like the race war, so whatever we want to do, civil unrest, which is, I believe, inevitable. I believe that is planned so that most of the people will do anything for security again. They will beg for security. And the plan is to let that violence run so long that most of the people that would have resisted it are dead.
Yeah, like Sri Lanka. That's exactly, they want to create a Sri Lanka moment. Yeah, I've been saying that for months.
Right.
But that's what they want to lead us towards, where it's complete chaos. And oh, by the way, do you want fuel? You got to get a barcode. Here's your QR code. Then you can get fuel. Then you can get food.
You want to pay your property taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's exactly right. So I look at it as a different military analogy, because again, I think that we've gone so far down the path. This is inevitable. So what are the two best ways to get out of an ambush? All right, the first best way is to not walk into the motherfucker, right? It is, right?
Yes, it is. But, I'm agreeing with you, Vima. Right, yes, it is. Wait a minute. That doesn't look right.
We're not doing that. But too late. Accident of birth or whatever. We were already in the ambush. Like, it's already too late. All right, we're already standing in the kill zone. The second best way to have an ambush is to respond overwhelmingly violently in a way that they were not prepared for, so that you win anyway, even though you started on the back foot. And it's rough, but I feel like that's where we're at. The only way out of this, in my opinion, is that we have our people organized and their stuff wired tight and ready to brawl. And don't start it because, unfortunately, the power of the state right now will crush you. If there's only a couple of people to go after, state's very good at crushing things. All right, if you wait until violence has kicked off on every street corner, that's a little bit different. All right, there's not enough drones and hellfire missiles and Steel Team Six guys to whack everybody then. And if you can have your people in such a manner, they can overwhelmingly respond when that happens, you still have a chance of victory on the backside.
And that's an interesting proposition because I think two things. I think one, that's spot on. And two, I think, I've said for months and months and months that this is going to grow. How do I say it? It's going to go tribal, right? Because you talked about it before, right?
Yes.
It's going to go tribal. And you and I know we're military guys, right? So we think this way. I know for a fact that there are a lot of groups right now that are quietly in the background organizing, stockpiling, getting squared away for comms, getting squared away for action plans to first consolidate and mount a defense, but mm-hmm. then second to go after the key people in their areas that have caused the problems and take them off the board and then start going after the bad guys and put the bad guys in disarray. I know that there's groups all over the country that are doing that. Now, how organized they are, how squared away they are, that still stands to, it's very, very, it's a very fluid situation, but I do think there are lots of people like you and I that are having this discussion right now that are thinking about, we know things are going to go sideways. Cause you're right. Yeah. I've said for 2 years, this only ends one way with gunfire. There's no other way out We're not voting our way out. We're not reforming the system that the politician, in fact, I think the politicians both at the state level and in DC are so short-sighted and so drunk with power and so addicted to children that they have completely lost sight of the bigger picture, which is they are an endangered species. When this kicks off, there is going to be a lot of people with an axe to grind. And I thought that this would have already happened with the disclosures around the vaccines. When people figured out they had nothing left to live for because they signed a death sentence by getting the shots, I figured people would go off the reservation. And I'm amazed at how many people are still blissfully unaware. They're blissful. Like, I was literally talking to my girlfriend's kids were telling me the other day, one of our teachers just died last week.
Right.
30 years old, dropped dead.
Right.
And no one asks the question, what the fuck?
Right. Literally, this shit didn't happen. Fuck?
Yeah. Right. And in fact, and this is like the fourth person directly that I've known. Like one of my good friends, she was a Marine.
Yeah.
And went through PTSD counseling with her. Spent a week in a group session with her. I mean, amazing lady. Like, she had a PhD in nursing. She was a director of an oncology unit and literally got her third shot within 24 hours. She's gone.
Oh, my God.
And nobody asked the question, what the fuck?
Right.
And then a couple of weeks later, a buddy of mine says, hey, I'm going to go get a booster. I'm like, why the fuck are you doing that?
Right.
He goes, did you go with me? And I'm like, yeah, I'll go with you. So
somebody's gonna drive home.
And just as we're walking in, I go, you don't have to do this. This is a really bad idea. Gets the shot. We walk out 15 minutes later. We're not even out the front fucking door. I don't feel good. Boom. Gone. Like, couldn't revive him. Gone.
Holy shit.
He had blood clots in like
everywhere.
Four main arteries.
Oh, my God.
Just gone.
And yeah, it's fucking
they're like, well, wild. This is normal. So anyway, my point is that I'm surprised that people haven't gone off the reservation there, right? There's all these opportunities for people to go off the reservation, but it comes down to the amount of garbage in the system. Even if like the last week where there was the disclosure around Hillary Clinton, the tape with Hillary Clinton that all those New York cops were killed over that was found in the Wiener laptop. Right. I don't know how much truth or validity there is to that.
Exactly.
That said, even if it came out, even if the images were released, even if that horrific scene was played out on a national level, people wouldn't believe it because of all the AI and because of all the disinformation.
Well, see, that's part of the problem. And, to the clot shots and all that kind of stuff, too, they're still censoring that information to a degree, so it's still deniable, Like, if you don't, if you haven't seen it happen like you've seen it happen, people can still deny that. So I actually don't think that's a lever for now, unless people start just mass dying, in which case it'd be different.
I think it is happening. I think people don't haven't put the pieces together that this mass die-off's occurring around them, right? Because when COVID started, like, 1 in 10, 1 in 20 people knew somebody that could have died from COVID.
Yeah.
But I will tell you now, since 2021, since the shots were released, 1 in 3 or every other person knows someone directly that has died since they got the vaccine. Everybody I know that's gotten the vaccine. In fact, a good friend of mine, he was a superintendent for a school district. Mm-hmm. And so he's a PhD, smart guy, educator. Yeah. He was very conservative. And then all of a sudden he got the shot. And now he's a flaming liberal and buys all the narratives. And literally says to me, and we're having dinner, and he says, you know, I started having heart problems just after I got the shot. And I just tilted my head and looked at him like, you don't see a correlation?
Right.
He's like, no. I'm like, you got the shot. You didn't have heart problems before you got the shot. Now you got the shot. You have heart problems. Huh. I wonder how the correlation there. But that to me shows you just how powerful the influencing operations have been. And I'll even go a step further. I think there's something in that shot that makes people malleable to whatever bullshit they see.
It's entirely possible. Yeah, no, I would buy that. Absolutely. Well, which actually does a pretty good job of keeping the population in line, too. But I think the part that tips this over is not the shots. Maybe it is in a while when the numbers get bigger, but I think it's something entirely different. I think it's the violence that is already happening and will continue to escalate because of all the, opening of the border, 30 million illegals here, as well as the intentional nerfing of the cops over the last, at least 3, if not more like 5 years.
5 years. Yeah.
It's been 5 years.
It's been going on since 2018 is when they
really started. Right.
Defunding. They were doing it quietly in the background.
Right.
And then they started the whole campaign of we need to defund the police or rethink policing, which is right out of pawns in the game anyway, reduce the police force, increase the violence level, and then usher in a totalitarian government. They're on schedule.
So this is how their chaos starts, is keeping this on schedule. But the inevitable backlash of that is not like your really smart, organized people. It's more like just people getting fed up, a vigilante reaction, which is inevitable. It's going to happen. That's where you start getting this absolute, back and forth, absolute chaos happen. So I'm actually amazed that we haven't seen more of that, but I think that's coming. I think that's the real catalyst.
I do too. And I say that, two things, right? Because the other thing that I thought they were going to go after, which they haven't gone after, is the 2A, right? They've made overtures. The ATF has come out with these new rules. I can't remember what the latest, ludicrous rule is. It's gun shows, background checks at gun shows. That's what it is.
Okay.
They've been wanting to do that forever and ever anyway, right?
Right.
But they haven't really gone after it from a legislation perspective because they know it's not popular and they know it's going to get challenged in court. And they haven't gone after FFLs either, right? I figured they'd go after all the FFLs. And the other piece that they haven't played yet, which is that's still there, is the IRS. I know there's a lot of people, and I'm one of them across this country, that owes the IRS a pile of money for the last couple of years that they haven't been able to pay, and they're now unemployed. Much like in the situation I'm in, and that bill is going to come due too, where they start foreclosing and seizing property, which is exactly how I think they're going to do part of this too. So that'll generate a backlash too. And the question becomes, what is that backlash going to look like? Because I think the first couple of times they seize, a business or a house, and a community figures out what's going on, because they'll figure it out very quickly.
Right.
Then I guarantee you, the next time they do it, they'll meet a very strong armed response, and it'll be like, "You're not coming in here. You can leave now." So, and I think that's the next order of battle too, right? And you're right. If you try and look at all the scenarios, then you can drive yourself crazy with all the different rabbit holes you go down. But I think there's a lot of different lines of operation that are all at play that are going to coalesce all at the same time. But I think you're spot on. I think the other piece too is the one, and this is the piece I really wanted to get to, right? I wanted to kind of pick your brain for how you see things developing. But really the question that I get all the time, and we'll talk about this tonight in the sit rep too, is, or the round table, is what should people be doing right now, right? What is the call to action as you see it for the country?
Man, I'm with Bracken on this one. This is going to be wildly unpopular, but I believe it's the only way to survive this, what happens next. You cannot like harden your own house in your own objective and think that you're going to be okay. It has to become what I call the barbarian village concept. We have to, even if it's container houses in the woods or tents or some nonsense, we have got to get to a point where we have little compounds and whatnot where we can fall back to, or preferably live together as normal life, that are defensible and that have food that reproduces, sheep, chickens, goats, that kind of thing, for the things that come next. And the first question that usually comes up with that is, well, isn't that hellfire missile bait? By the time that's a problem, they're not going to have enough hellfire missiles. But if you look at the problem more of a power vacuum, because they're letting chaos happen, and they don't have the federal troops or the cops to protect things anymore. You look at like cartel bleed over the border. You look at gangs getting bigger and more organized. You can't defend against things like that yourself. All right, so units of like 20 families that live together in little compounds and things like that, I believe, is the only way to survive in any kind of mass numbers. I think everybody else, like once this gets really spicy, is totally screwed. I mean, completely screwed.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because if you're, it's one of the things I love about Bracken, right? Is he sees it from the draconian view and looks at it from the draconian view, and then is not afraid to say it.
Right.
Like some of the shit he says is like, wow, right. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're probably right, spot on. Right. And it's wildly unpopular.
It is.
Because everybody wants, they want the Lego song, right? Everything is awesome. No, it's not. And I've said for a while, it's going to go tribal, right? I agree with that. I think you're right. It's amazing how many times I have this conversation almost every day that people say, well, I'm just going to hunker down in my house and my wife and I are going to find it. If 50 guys are rushing your house from all directions, that's a die in place mission.
Right.
And more importantly, it's a die in place. They're going to pick up the $20,000 worth of kit that you have, and they're going to give it to one of their guys, and then they're going to go to the next house. And just like the Serbs did, right?
Yeah.
Watching the Serbs go house to house to house and killing
Lebanese Muslim
families, raping the women.
Sunnis versus Shias.
Yeah, everywhere. It's the same game all over the place, right?
It's predictable.
So so two things. Joel Skousen he's created a book, like, here's the safe zones. Here's the safest parts of the country to go to, right? Get the fuck out of the cities. The cities are death zones. If you live in an apartment, death. If you live in the middle of the city, death. If you don't have a bug out plan, death. If you don't have a plan to go somewhere outside of the city and no resources, death. If you don't have any food and water to hunker down for a few weeks, death. I mean, you look at all the different ways, and then that's just the food, water, and violence. That's not the disease, the famine, and all the other shit that goes along with that, right?
Right.
So I think you're right. I think that there's the cake they're baking is the violence cake. They're gonna amp it up through these Palestinian protests. Mm-hmm. They're importing Hamas right now. That's what the Gaza Pier is all about, to bring those motherfuckers here, which I think is treason on the highest level.
Agreed.
But let me spin this on a positive note. As much as this is going to suck, and all of us, this is the part that the other conversation I have is, I have to tell people every day, I've got family members here. I've got family members here. You're never going to get to them. You're going to lose people that you care about. You're going to lose people directly that you care about. You're going to lose people that you never thought you could lose. You're going to lose them in probably some of the weirdest and some of the most obscure ways that you never even thought possible. You need to steel yourself that that's coming. But more importantly, you need to turn that anger that you get out of that into something productive and turn it into a call of action right now. Like, what should you be doing? Well, don't focus on your little enclave. Focus right. on, like, in fact, I had this conversation, Troop and I had this conversation the other day. I was saying to him that, you know, he's like, you've got bug out plans all over the country. I go, no, that's the fucking Alamo. I have a fallout plan and I have an evacuation plan, but that's the fucking Alamo. And that's like, no other options. Get here if you can. If you're not dead, then you have some things to fall in on to defend yourself for a little while. That's the Alamo. This is a bug out plan. Like, I look around my place right now. You know, I live in a pretty certain secure community. It's gated, but even that's not defendable.
No,
if you don't have enough people, it's not defendable. It's just it's basically a fixed position to die in, because you got to get out the gates if you have to displace, and you're not driving out the gates if there's no gas. So you're walking, and if it's surrounded, you walk into guns. So, and there's no water here. So there's a lot of different things. You know what I'm saying?
Well, one of the guys in our group chat, I remember who it was, he's a fire captain. That's something I talk about in one of my books is, look, right now, fire departments are incredible. Like, response time in the United States, they're incredible at putting things out. But you multiply the amount of fires by like 10. All right, how fire resistant is your neighborhood in a windstorm? It's not. A couple of Molotov cocktails, you know, some tracers. We could lose huge swaths of infrastructure, you know, just like that.
Oh, we will.
Yeah.
There'll be uncontrollable fires in cities. There'll be uncontrollable fires in different rural areas that will start, and there won't be anybody to put them out.
Right.
Because the fire department will either be decimated or they'll be so taxed in other areas they can't.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think, but it brings me back to what I was asking you before. If, given your background, what would you be doing to prepare right now? What would be your advice? Let's go there.
All right. Advice number one is learn how to fight at like the crime scale, you know, pistol and a knife, so that you can survive long enough to, you know, get back to the house. The second piece after that is, you know, learn how to fight at extended ranges with a rifle, and then get some friends. And this is more important than the learning how to fight part. Get some friends that are serious, because you've got to have buddies, and start working on that compound model, wherever it needs to be, and whatever, you know, low budget answer that you've got to have. You've got to have the tribe, you've got to have friends, and you've got to have a realistic plan to get there and live for an extended period of time. That extended period of time is the important part. You know, this is not going to be over in like a week. And I'm talking potentially like 20, 30 years of having to basically live behind walls. I think that's where we're headed.
Yeah. And that includes, I want to make sure I encapsulate this, because we're coming up on an hour and I told you I'd only keep you an hour. So,
oh, snap. So, it is.
I know. So it's easy to burn it. I told you this would be an hour conversation where we started this, man. So, but you're right. So in addition to that extended living model, behind walls, that means learn how to grow stuff, you know, have livestock.
Animal husbandry, yes.
Yeah, have medical skills, have domestic skills. Yeah, and I'm going to say this, you know, we don't teach domestic skills. Like, you know, we don't teach homemaking. We don't teach people how to mend stuff. Like, home economics is something we just don't do anymore.
Right.
Which most people, they think that when it wears out, if there's a hole in it, you throw it away. That's not how my parents used to mend stuff until it was unserviceable, right?
Right.
That's where we in the military came up with that term, unserviceable, because you can't.
It can't be repaired, right.
Yeah. So, and I think those are all valuable skills to have. Like, you know, my group has chickens, they have livestock, they have growing skills. There's a lot of those skills, right? And medical skills. I think the urban areas, I don't care where you are in the urban area. If you're in an urban area, even if you have a med center set up, you have an armory set up, you have a strong point set up, the urban areas are going to be overwhelmed, because as people start to run out of food, like Matt says, it's going to go it's going to go to cannibalism within 3 to 4 days. I agree with that. And being in the city, you just become a buffet for somebody that's trying to survive, right? And if you're outside, look, a lot of people don't have the resources to get out. Like I don't have a place outside the city that I can rapidly go to, right? I have plans where I can, you know, E&E out of here and get you know, a certain distance away. But at some point, then you're back to living off the land. And there's, you know, between here and let's say Idaho, there isn't a hell of a lot. There's not a lot to live off of, right? There's a lot of rock, a lot of dirt, and a lot of grass, and there isn't a hell of a lot more than that. So you have to account for all of those different factors in all your plans. But the biggest thing I would say, which I'll let you chime in on, then we'll close this out, is I talk about have a bug out plan. Don't plan on defending to the death. Have an E&E plan. Right. Sorry, escape and evasion plan with strip maps, et cetera, to get to a specific point. Just pick a place. Doesn't matter where it's at. You're just displacing to get to a waypoint or assembly area so you can meet other people and move on to a final destination and have a final destination, right? That would be my advice. I know you have some thoughts on this because you were talking about it on Mike Ferris' show.
Right. Well, first of all, there's always a way. Maybe it's unorthodox, but if things have really gone that badly, there's a bug out close to you. You might have to borrow it instead of buy it. And it's mentality you have to be in.
We call that procurement.
Right.
Yeah. You send a couple of warrant officers, they procure it. You don't ask any questions. And then you just use that equipment.
Right. You know, so that's option number one. A second way that I've been telling a lot of people that live in cities that live close to, you know, 20, 30 miles from rural areas is right now, while things are not awful, you know, co-op with somebody. Go to a farmer's market enough times that you establish a bit of a relationship and buy in. You know, buy in for a couple of $100 of chicken feed so they can expand operations. That's still a relationship, and that's somebody that knows you. And that might not buy you, you know, long-term safety and security, but it's at least somewhere to start. These are the ways that we have to start thinking. We have to start thinking in more desperate measures. And nobody wants to hear that, but it's true. The other thing is you have to look at this and know that it's happening. All right, it's easy to stick your head in the sand or, you know, buy a new gun this week instead of, you know, a backpack or a chicken. But you have to start thinking about what's realistic and what you actually need. And a safe full of guns is not it. That's what I get mostly from my side. You know, I got all these guns and stuff. Like, hey, cool, man. How many can you carry at once? Not very many. Like,
and by the way, that shit's heavy. And the older I get, the less amount of shit that I want to carry,
right?
And the more amount of shit that I want to throw in the vehicle or drag behind me in some kind of a wagon or something that I could tow, so I don't have to carry it, especially water. Because when you add,
it's brutal.
Yeah, well, this is the part that most people don't get, right? When you walk outside the wire, especially in Iraq, you're walking out with your base load out, which is, you know, you had M16, M4, SCAR, whatever you carried.
Something, yeah.
Plus ammo, plus grenades, plus water, plus, you know, med kits, plus whatever other shit like AT4s and other stuff that you carried. Right. All that shit's heavy.
Right.
And you get tired, you're sweating bullets all the time, so you're pushing water. And guess what? You carry 4 quarts of water, that shit's gone in like 2 miles. Especially 120 degree heat. And you're fucking tired all the time.
Yeah.
So anybody that thinks you're going to carry 6 guns, I would have 26 inch barrel, my Barrett 50 cal on my back with my 9mm and 10 magazines and my AR with like 20 magazines and my vest and my helmet. Yeah. You're going to be tired and you're not going very far.
Right.
And you're definitely not going fast. Right. So keep that all in mind, right? There's all that. So I think that's a good thing at least to give people an idea of. We're coming up on an hour, so I want to keep this at an hour. What's your any final thoughts for the audience? Because I know you're going to talk to them in about 4 or 5 hours.
Right. Yeah, you know, don't get black-pilled either, man. You know, things can be won, things can be survived. It's you need to find that balance point of realistically getting it together. All right, everything's not sunshine and roses. All right, but it's not an inevitable loss either. It's somewhere in between, and that's where you need to get more people thinking. Really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think I think however this turns out, I think on the other side of this, ultimately a lot of these plans are, that the elite have, are going to fail.
Because, me too.
Complex, yes. Operations, right?
No place to rest, contact, intact.
Yeah, for those of us that see the other side of this, we see a very hard group of people that come out of this that won't allow any of this shit to ever happen again. So that'll be the good thing that comes out of this. Now, what the country looks like, what the long term looks like, I don't really care right now, right?
Not my problem.
I want to get through that right now, and then I'll start thinking about reconstitution on the other side of it. But I do want to have a vision for how I want things to look on the other side, because that'll help me guide through this and keep somewhat of my sanity as we go through this, right? Because look, if you, any of those plans that they have that go sideways, and one of them will go sideways.
Agreed.
I think it's going to create opportunities that we hadn't even thought of. And that's why your comment about making and thinking outside the box and accepting that we're already there and thinking draconian, I think that's exactly where we need to be, because that will give us, beyond a shadow of a doubt, it'll give us the ability to think outside the box and seize opportunities as they occur in front of us. And most people don't think that way. They right. think, I have to get back to normal. The best thing you can do right now is accept that we're never going back there.
Nope.
There was no such thing as normal in the first place. The cards were stacked against us when we were born. So now just make the best of it and start and plan accordingly. I think that's spot on. So anyway, I appreciate you coming on, man. How do people find you? How do they find you?
You can find me either on Twitter at Way Off the Res, Way Off the Res. You can find me over at my training company, which is defiancetraininggroup.com, or at wrathofwendigo.com.
Okay. I will post those in the comments section for awesome. Everybody. If you send them over to me, I'll post them
much
in the comments section.
Will do.
All right, bud. Appreciate it. We'll see you tonight.
Sweet. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.